Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh and welcome to Ummah Radio. You are listening to the Mustalah al-Hadith class with myself, Abu Mus'ab. Now the kitab that we are doing is known as Muqaddimatun fi Usul al-Hadith of Mulana Abdul Haq al-Dihlawi rahimahullah. We had just done actually, so to say, one real class from the kitab. The class which came before that was just an introduction to the science of Hadith. So, just to recap, in our last class we touched on just what is a hadith, and from there we branched out into another three, we broke it down into three types: that a hadith consists of a qawl, meaning a statement, a fi'l, an action, and a taqreer, which is an affirmation. So from that point, that again in turn broke down into another further three categories, which was al-marfu', which is a hadith which is linked and attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The second one was al-mawquf, which was a hadith which stops at a sahabi. And then the last was al-maqtu', which is a narration which ends by a tabi'i. So that is what we had basically done last time. And we stopped at that point in the book itself. It is page 34. If you are looking from the PDF reader, then it's page 36. So that is where we stopped by Al-Hadithu wal-Athar. So we will continue on from there, insha'Allah. Bismillah walhamdulillahi wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillahi wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala. So it says Al-Hadithu wal-Athar. There are two terms, and I spoke on this last time as well, that you have the term which is known as a hadith, and then you also have this term which is called an athar. What is the difference between the two? Is there a difference between the two? He answers it over here. He says, وَقَدْ خَصَّصَ بَعْضُهُمُ الْحَدِيثَ بِالْمَرْفُوعِ وَالْمَوْقُوفِ إِذِ الْمَقْطُوعُ يُقَالُ لَهُ الْأَثَرِ. Mulana Abdul Haq, rahimahullah, he mentions here, he said that some of the muhaddithin, they use the term al-hadith for narrations which are marfu' and mawquf, meaning either the narration must be linked directly to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, or alternatively it must stop at a sahabi. It cannot stop at a tabi'i. This is what some of the muhaddithin had used this term. Because he says, إِذِ الْمَقْطُوعُ يُقَالُ لَهُ الْأَثَرُ. Because a narration which ends by a tabi'i, then that narration would be termed as an athar and not as a hadith. So here you find one opinion of some ulama who say that there's a difference between the two. They will only accept marfu' and mawquf as being applicable to use the term hadith for them, but not for a maqtu' narration. He continues on, he says, وَقَدْ يُطْلَقُ الْأَثَرُ عَلَى الْمَرْفُوعِ أَيْضًا كَمَا يُقَالُ الْأَدْعِيَةُ الْمَأْثُورَةُ لِمَا جَاءَ مِنَ الْأَدْعِيَةِ عَنِ النَّبِيِّ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ. He says that the term athar, now we looked at the word hadith, now we look at the word athar. This word is used unrestrictedly for marfu'a hadith as well. So athar is more encompassing than the word hadith, according to this opinion of some other ulama. That the word athar, okay, basically there are difference of opinions. Some ulama would say hadith would refer to all three types, marfu', mawquf, and maqtu', while others would say like this, that it only refers to the two. Now in this case here, he says that the term athar is so vast that it encompasses the marfu' narrations, the mawquf narrations, and obviously the maqtu' narrations as well. So he says that this term athar is used unrestrictedly for a narration which is linked and taken and attributed directly to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He says, for example, like how it is said, al-adi'iyatul ma'athura, the prophetic supplications, for those supplications which has come to us from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So it's something which has a complete linked chain to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and yet we use the word athar. Ma'thura is from this word athar. So we use the word athar for marfu' a hadith as well. This is what he says here. Now you see in the footnote over here, he just mentioned something, by the way. This is now Mulana Salman Nadwi, whose footnote this is. He says that Imam Ibn As-Salah, whose famous kitab is known as Muqaddimah Ibn Salah, he mentions that وعند فقهاء خراسان تسمية الموقوف بالأثر والمرفوع بالخبر. He mentions that according to the fuqaha of Khurasan, they used the mawquf with the when a narration is mawquf, they would call it an athar. But if it's marfu', they would now call it a khabar. So now we have three terms: athar, khabar, and hadith. And you'll come to it now as we move on to the next page. But to, just to continue, it says, وقال أبو القاسم الفوراني الفقهاء يقولون الخبر ما يروى عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والأثر ما يروى عن الصحابة. And this is opinion of Imam Abu al-Qasim. This is something which is quite well-known opinion. He says that the fuqaha, they say that a khabar, again we use now the different term khabar, hadith, and athar. So a khabar is that narration which is reported from Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam, while an athar is that which is narrated from a sahabi. That is why, although like he mentions here, you have kitabs which is known as al-adi'iyatul ma'thura, but the term athar is not used so much in our daily speech. As you would say, the normal layman's terms, athar is not used so commonly as much as the word hadith is. But when it comes to the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum, for the statements of the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum, in layman's terms, it's not generally termed a hadith. So this opinion here of those fuqaha who said and chose to use the word athar for narrations of the Sahaba, you can see that it definitely did have a taking amongst the people. Okay, so that was with regards to the khabar, hadith, and athar. So now we move on just for a little bit, last piece. He says, قال النووي رحمه الله وعند المحدثين كل هذا يسمى أثرا لأنه مأخوذ من أثرت الحديث أي رويته. He mentions here that Imam al-Nawawi رحمه الله, he says that according to the muhaddithin, all of these terms, which is whether it's mawquf, marfu' and maqtu', all of them are termed as athar, meaning that the word athar is the most encompassing of all meanings, that everything can fit within this category of athar. Why? Because it is taken from this, and this is now from an Arabic perspective, he says, athartul hadith. When if you were to speak and you say athartul hadith, meaning I narrated a hadith, ay rawaytuhu, I narrated a hadith. So that was with regards to that point. That's just a footnote. So that's the end of page 34. We now move on to page 35, which is still continuing the same subject. So he says, والطحاوي سمى كتابه المشتمل على بيان الأحاديث النبوية وآثار الصحابة بشرح معاني الآثار. He says that Imam al-Tahawi rahimahullah, he named his kitab, one of Imam al-Tahawi rahimahullah's kitabs, which is so to say one of the most famous kitabs, he named this kitab شرح معاني الآثار. And this kitab contains a hadith from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, which is linked directly, and it also contains the statements of Sahaba radiyallahu anhum. So both of these type of narrations are found within this kitab, and yet the kitab is known as Sharah Ma'ani ul Athar, the meanings of the Athar. So here we having this word again, Athar, being applied in a broader sense to encompass everything. So here what he's just basically trying to do is to show you that although there is a difference of opinion amongst the fuqaha and the muhaddithin as to whether everything can be termed a hadith, whether it's better it be called an athar, whether it's best it be called a khabar, and things like this, although there may be these differences of opinion, but you find ulama having all different views, so therefore there's no harm if you call it a hadith or an athar or a khabar. Because as you can see, there were muhaddithin who had named their books and made statements like this in this regard. So that is basically just the one statement which is found on page 35. So in that case, we move on to page 36. He moves on, he says, وَقَالَ السَّخَاوِي رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ إِنَّ لِلطَّبَرَانِي كِتَابًا مُسَمَّى بِتَهْذِيبِ الْآثَارِ مَعَ أَنَّهُ مَخْصُوصٌ بِالْمَرْفُوعِ. He says that Imam al-Sakhawi rahimahullah. Now Imam al-Sakhawi rahimahullah, also one of the very, very famous ulama of hadith, he is the as you can say, the most famous student of Imam Ibn Hajar al-Asqalani rahimahullah. And Imam al-Sakhawi rahimahullah is a very famous muhaddith in his own right. So he says that Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah, he has a kitab, and Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah has written numerous kitabs on hadith. He has al-Mu'jam al-Kabir, al-Mu'jam al-Awsat, al-Mu'jam al-Saghir, and other kitabs of hadith as well. Now he also has another kitab, all consisting of a hadith. And one of the kitabs that Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah has authored is a kitab by the name of Tahdhibul Athar. Here again, he's just showing that the word athar is being used to refer to a hadith which are directly attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. He says, "Ma'a annahu makhsusun bil marfu'i." Despite the fact that this book of Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah, it is filled and restricted only to marfu' narrations. There are no narrations which stop at a tabi'i, for example, in this book. Everything is linked directly attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. But despite that, Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah named this kitab Tahdhibul Athar to show that there is absolutely no harm to call a hadith an athar. He says, وَمَا ذُكِرَ فِيهِ مِنَ الْمَوْقُوفِ فَبِطَرِيقِ التَّبَعِ وَالتَّطَفُّلِ. He says that this book of Imam al-Tabarani rahimahullah, he restricted it to narrations which are attributed directly to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And as for those narrations which he mentions therein, which are mawquf, meaning it stops at a sahabi, he says, فَبِطَرِيقِ التَّبَعِ وَالتَّطَفُّلِ, that he mentions this year just as a follow-up, just as a child category, to put it in those terms. Meaning that the hadith already exists which is authentic, and this is just another one which is relating to the topic, so therefore he would put it in. Maybe you can say there's a slight change in wording, or a previous authentic hadith, lengthier one, has come, and this one is a little bit shorter, or something of the sort like this. The narrations are similar. Now this mawquf one, because he has the sanad for it as well, so therefore he included it into the book, not as a freestanding narration, but as a follow-up narration. So the book was basically restricted in those terms to only a hadith which are directly attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. But despite that, he called it Tahdhibul Athar. So yeah, he just basically showing that the kitab contains very few mawquf ahadith, not as primary sources but more as secondary sources, and it was, so to say, majority of marfu' narrations, and despite that it still got called a book of athar. That is the only statement on page 36, so therefore we move on to page 37. Now he moves on to the next point. He just touched on it earlier when he said that you have now the term khabar. We had done the word hadith, and now we had touched the word athar. Now we come to the last one, which is al-khabar. So he says, al-khabru wal-hadith. You have two terms now, khabar and hadith. He says, wal-khabru wal-hadithu fil mashhuri bima'na wahid. That according to the well-known view of the ulama, khabar and hadith are synonyms. They have the same meaning. There's no harm in using them interchangeably. وبعضهم خص الحديث بما جاء عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والصحابة والتابعين. Some of the fuqaha, they restricted the word hadith to that which has come from Nabi صلى الله عليه وسلم and from the Sahaba and the Tabi'in, as we have seen now previously. In fact, at the beginning when we discussed that what is a hadith, then he said it is a marfu', a mawquf, and a maqtu'. This is عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم والصحابة والتابعين. Those are the three categories, meaning that some of the muhaddithin, they restricted the word hadith for these type of narrations only. والخبر بما جاء عن أخبار الملوك والسلاطين والأيام الماضية. While this group of ulama, they say that the word khabar, now on the other hand, this is used for stories of the kings, the salatin, plural of the word sultan, وَأَيَّامُ الْمَاضِيَةِ, and the days of the past, meaning of history and stories and things like this. They use the word khabar in this regard and not the word hadith. So here you find some difference of opinion amongst the ulama, who don't use the word khabar for a hadith, but rather they prefer to use it for history purposes rather. That's why he says, وَلِهَذَا يُقَالُ لِمَنْ يَشْتَغِلُ بِالسُنَّةِ مُحَدِّثٌ وَلِمَنْ يَشْتَغِلُ بِالتَّوَارِيخِ أَخْبَارِ. He says, for this reason, that because there is a difference of opinion on the usage of the word khabar, that is why you will find that a person who involves himself with the sunnah, meaning with ahadith, he will be termed a muhaddith, while the person who busies himself with history, he is termed as an akhbari. So you have like fuqaha, you have muhaddithin, and now people that muhaddithin are used for people who are delving into the science of hadith, while those who go into history, they will be termed like this as an akhbari and not as a muhaddith for going into history purposes. And on the flip side of the coin, an akhbari is not a term which is used for a person involved in hadith. So akhbari and muhaddith are not interchangeable terms from that angle. So that's just on the point of khabar, hadith and athar. Nothing much too difficult to understand over there. So we move on to the next point. Now this point again here broke off from where we had come. Originally we came with the word hadith. Hadith broke into three categories of marfu', mawquf, and maqtu'. And that again, hadith then broke down into further three categories of hadith, khabar, and athar. But now we're going back up to the hadith which we broke into marfu', mawquf, and maqtu'. Now we are dealing with the word marfu' over here. So he says, الرَّفْعُ قِسْمَانِ صَرِيحٌ وَحُكْمِي. That for a hadith to be marfu', there are two ways that it can be so. Either sarih, it is explicit, wa hukmi. Hukmi is, as you can say, implicit. It is legal, is as you would find the meaning of it legally. But to put it in more better terms, sarih is explicit and hukmi is implicit. So he says, وَالرَّفْعُ قَدْ يَكُونُ صَرِيحًا وَقَدْ يَكُونُ حُكْمًا. That for a hadith to be marfu', it can come through the means of being stated explicitly, or it can come through the means of being done so implicitly. So he says, now we move on to the first type. He says, Al-Qawliyu Sarih, the explicit worded hadith, which is explicitly worded as being marfu'. So he says, Amma Sarihan, Fafil Qawliyi كقول الصحابي رضي الله عنه سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول كذا. For a hadith to be explicitly stated that it is marfu', that it is attributed to Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم, for example, he says, you find a صحابي رضي الله عنه who would say, سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول كذا. And this is one of the most famous words you will find always in hadith. عن عمر بن الخطاب رضي الله عنه قال سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول إنما الأعمال بالنيات. For example, like that, you find they mentioned explicitly in the hadith that سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. I heard رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم say so. So it's stated explicitly. He says, أو كقوله أي الصحابي أو قول لغيره قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. Another way of how it can be stated explicitly is if a sahabi or somebody else as well, they say, قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, that Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم said. And this is also something you find time and time and time again in the books of hadith, that a sahabi would say, قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, and he would then mention the words of Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم. The usage of the word, or the statement that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said so, أو عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم أنه قال كذا. Or the third type is, for example, that Rasulullah from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said so. These are all terms that you will find used time and time again in the books of hadith, as the Sahaba radiyallahu anhum. Sometimes they say like this, سمعت. Sometimes they say قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, or عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. These are terms that you will find throughout the books of hadith. Whichever book of hadith you open, you will find time and again these words used like this. So this is one way that a stated hadith is explicitly stated to be marfu' by attributing it directly to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Okay, was just asked to summarize the two points of athar and khabar. As far as it goes, in our general terms, as he said, that the mashhur view is that athar and khabar are synonyms. So there's nothing really tricky about the whole thing. If you do want to decide to use a hadith and call it a khabar, there's absolutely no harm in doing so. And in fact, that will come, I think, if I'm not mistaken, later on in the book. And I alluded to this in the first introduction, I think, as well, that Imam At-Tahawi, rahimahullah, on a slightly different matter, but he has a small article which he has written called At-Taswiyatu Bayna Haddathana Wa Akhbarana, on that point, that to say Haddathana and Akhbarana, and now this comes into more the narrating of hadith, when you say Haddathana Ahmad, Haddathana Al-Humaydi, Haddathana Abdullah ibn Salam, for example, like that, you use the word Haddathana, then you use the word Akhbarana, then these words like this, the Haddathana and Akhbarana, not quite to do with this topic, but there you have the word Khabar being used again. Now Imam At-Tahawi rahimahullah, it goes about a couple of pages on that topic, where he proves from with references of muhaddithin and ulama and so on, who use the word khabar and hadith interchangeably. So that's just on that point. So there is definitely the opinion amongst the ulama who say that khabar and hadith are two synonyms, so there's no harm whether you use this one or whether you use that one. But like he says, that at the same time, while saying that, the term which is accepted amongst the people is that a muhaddith is a person who deals in hadith, while an akhbari is a person who deals in history. So for that reason, you find that, and this, like I mentioned, is that, as you would say, the layman's terminology. In the layman's terminology, we'll always refer to the statements of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam as hadith. And this is something that everybody knows, whether it's English or Urdu, whatever website or book that you open up, always the term hadith will be used for the statements of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And quite very rarely you would ever come across the word khabar being used for a hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But again, like I say, this is in layman's terms. Amongst the ulama, they would use the word khabar, for example. So there's no harm whether a person uses the word khabar, or whether a person uses the word athar, or whether a person uses the word hadith. All three of them are fine and acceptable, and there are ulama who hold each one of those views, that the words of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam can be referred to using any one of the three terms. But technically, when a person says it's a khabar, or it's a hadith, or it's an athar, it makes no difference if what is being meant is the same, that it comes from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So in any case, that is on that point, and we had just now previously completed what he said, al-qawliyu sarih, the explicitly stated hadith, that it explicitly is stated to be marfu'. We move on to the next point, because it's not something very much different to it, it all goes hand in hand. So he says, al-fi'liyu sarih, now the explicitly mentioned, not by word but through an action, that it is marfu'. So he says, wa fil fi'li, now you have an explicit hadith which is stated to be marfu', but it is done through an action. For example, he says, ka qawli sahabi ra'aytu rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam fa'ala kadha. For example, you see a sahabi would say that I saw Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam do this. Now this, if you were to take, for example, a hadith comes to mind, Hazrat Mughira ibn Shu'bah radiyallahu anhu, when he says that I saw Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam wa masaha ala nasiyatihi wa khuffayhi, that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam performed wudu and then made masaha of his nasiya, of his forelock, and wiped over his leather socks. So this is, I saw Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam do it. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did not say any words in that particular hadith. Just for example, if we look at that hadith, it's the words of Hazrat Mughira ibn Shu'bah radiyallahu anhu, who is actually speaking and saying that I saw this scene take place. So it is an action of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam that he is describing, and him, by describing it in that manner, is proving that the hadith is marfu', it is explicitly linked and attributed to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Oh, he continues, he says, أو عن رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم أنه فعل كذا. Or alternatively, you would find in a narration, in a hadith, it says, it's from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam reported that about Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did such and such a thing. For example, using those words. أو عن الصحابي أو غيره مرفوعا أو رفعه أنه فعل كذا. And the third type he says is that it comes from, it's reported about a sahabi or from somebody else as well, and they use this word marfu'an. Now this is, for example, let me give you an example. He says that you would find, for example, a hadith, and the hadith is an Ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhu marfu'an qala Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. You using the word like this marfu'an explicitly in this manner, or alternatively, he would not call Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, but for example, an Ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhu marfu'an anna Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam salla qa'iman. Just for example, that Hadrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhu, and I'm not saying this is a hadith, this is something I just made up right now, but for example, Hadrat Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiyallahu anhu, it's reported marfu' from him that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam performed salah standing. Just for example now, something of that sort. So he's speaking about an action of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, but he's using the word marfu' to show that the clear linkage and attribution of this thing to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, using the word marfu'. And another way it can be, for example, عن ابن مسعود رضي الله عنه رفعه إلى النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم, and then he continues the hadith. So for example, to translate it is that حضرت Abdullah ibn Mas'ud رضي الله عنه said, and رفعه, he attributed it, he raised it as an attribution to Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم, and then that Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وسلم did a certain action. Just for example. So either you will see it as I saw Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam doing something, or it's reported about Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did a certain thing, or a sahabi reports it using the word marfu', or he uses it and he uses the word rafa'ahu. And these are terms that you find also throughout the books of hadith. So just to keep it in your mind, you will be coming across these terms when you move into the asanid of the hadith. Now the last one in this particular chapter over here is At-Taqririyu Sarih, the explicit affirmation of a hadith. So he says, وَالتَّقْرِيرِ أَنْ يَقُولَ الصَّحَابِي أَوْ غَيْرِهِ فَعَلَ فُلَانٌ أَوْ أَحَدٌ بِحَضْرَةِ النَّبِيِّ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ كَذَا وَلَا يَذْكُرُ إِنْكَارَهُ. He says that an explicit affirmation is that a sahabi or someone else mentions that so-and-so did the certain action, or either fulan, so such a person, or somebody did this. Either they mention the person by name, or they simply just say that somebody did this. So somebody did this action in the presence of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Now there's two ways that this can happen. One is that either they explicitly mention that somebody did this in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did not reprimand or condemn him or correct him and on that point, using this word that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam didn't prevent him from it. That's one way of making a taqreer. Alternative way is to simply say that somebody did this action in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and that's as far as the narration go. He don't go any further and say that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam never took him to task or anything of the sort. If he ends it there, the fact is that if Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam was present there and this person did something, obviously if it was wrong, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam would have corrected him there and then. So the fact that if the sahabi don't mention the correction, then it means that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did not correct him, meaning that the action therefore is permissible. So two ways, like I say, either it's explicitly mentioned in the narration that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam didn't stop the person from doing that, or it need not be mentioned, but it just simply mentioned that an action was done in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and from that it's sufficient for us to know that if it was wrong, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam would have corrected it. Okay, so although this is another 3 points which still lead off on this here, which is the qawli, the hukmi now. We did the explicit, now we're supposed to come to the implicit ones. But as time is short, so therefore, inshallah, we won't go too much, and we'll stop here on this point on page 38 of the book, or 40 if you are using the numbers from the PDF. I mean, from the PDF reader's perspective. So in any case, we'll stop on this point of al-qawliyul hukmi, the implicit statement of a hadith. Now it is made marfu' through an implicit statement. But that, inshallah, we will do next time. So if anybody has any questions about anything which has been mentioned in the class, you can feel free to ask on Skype, the Skype name being Ummah Radio. Now, just to wrap up while I wait for any questions, or rather just to say, to recap, what we learned in this lesson is that there are three words which are used to describe a hadith. Either the word hadith, or the word athar, or the word khabar. Now, while there may be differences of opinion amongst the ulama, at the end of the day is whether you refer to a hadith with any of these three terms, it will be permissible in all three cases. The next thing we learned was that there are two ways for a marfu' hadith to be marfu', either explicitly stated, shown, or mentioned in that manner, or basically it's either explicit or implicit that the narration is marfu'. And we had touched on all three, the explicit ways, what that a sahabi or a person mentions that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam said so, or an explicit action is that a sahabi said Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did a certain action, and of course taking into consideration the other words which are used, that like this marfu'an, rafa'ahu, and so on and so forth. And the last one was at-taqririyu sarih, which was a sahabi or somebody mentions that someone did a certain action, Fulan ibn Fulan did this action in the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and whether he mentioned that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did not reprimand him, or whether he does not mention it, if he keeps silent, we know that the action was permissible. If he explicitly states that Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam did not condemn him, then too, from that way, we know that the action is not, there's no harm in it. Okay, there's a question here that on page 37 in Al-Khabr wal-Hadith, let me get first to page 37, Al-Khabr wal-Hadith, there's, what's the meaning of the last word before Al-Ayyam? An akhbar al-muluki wal-salatini wal-ayyam al-madiyah. Al-salatin, it's the plural of the word sultan, which in English is, okay, they also call it sultan, basically, how they pronounce it. So, Salatin is just simply the plural of the word sultan. Akhbar al-muluk, muluk is plural of the word malik, which means a king. Muluk is plural. Salatin is plural of the word sultan. And ayyam al-madiyah are the days which have passed by. That's the meaning of those three words. So next time, inshallah, we'll touch on the hukmi qawli, and the fi'ali hukmi, and the taqriri hukmi, and that would then end off the discussion on the hadith itself, and will now take us to a new point, to the sanad and the matan. We were just using all our discussion in the last two classes basically revolved around the usage of the word hadith, and what breaks off from that word hadith as it comes into sub-categories. So that is what the first chapter is dealing with, and we've got the last three hukmi, the implicit statement, action, and affirmation to deal with, and that is what we will do next week, inshallah. So On that point, then inshallah, we will end for now, and we will continue again next week, Tuesday, at 7:30 p.m. GMT or 8:30 p.m. BST, inshallah. So we end for now when we say, wa sallallahu wa sallama wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad, subhanallahi wa bihamdihi, subhanaka allahumma wa bihamdik, nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.